So I know that you were hoping that we would get away from The Next Generation without seeing Alexander again.
Listen, I knew that we wouldn't.
Did you really, though?
I kind of figured we would. Listen, we've had,
The show kind of forgot he existed.
I know, but they've been pulling, they pulled out the fucking Traveler last week. So, I mean, they've been really reaching into and, tying up the loose ends. So the fact that there was an Alexander episode didn't shock me,
It's interesting, though, because it's not really an Alexander episode until the very end.
Well, I mean...
And I don't know that... I mean...
This episode makes no goddamn sense, but I liked it. I liked this episode a lot, just because it was... It hit the... Now, I know a lot of this has to do with we have different opinions on Klingons.
Yeah, we do. That's very true.
Eric, I was thinking of something.
Okay.
I'm
ready.
And I mean to ask the listeners for... help in guiding me to this. But if I wanted to learn Klingon, where would I do that?
Okay, well, number one, it's Klingonese.
Really?
Well, at least that's old style. I don't know about new style. Well, style was Klingonese.
I'm a new style fan. I'm not going to do old style.
Okay, so Klingon. Fine. There are books, I believe. There are probably YouTube videos or other tutorials.
Because I think it would be great. I could just be that guy who knows, Klingon. And then I could teach Klingon. And that would be, what I did for a living.
If that's what you want to do, then I think that you should go to the Las Vegas convention in a couple years dressed as a Klingon.
Okay.
All right. That's settled. So Firstborn is, it's a Klingon episode. I don't hate it. But again, it's a Klingon episode.
Yeah.
And they leave me cold.
That's it.
I've given the reasons why they leave me cold before. And I don't know. I just feel like... I kind of have figured out why they leave me cold, actually.
Okay.
And it's something that I will wait to describe to everyone until we get to Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
Because Deep Space Nine does a couple of Klingon episodes, and I like those a lot more. And I figured out why, but we're going
to
wait.
Okay, so we'll take a compare and contrast then when it's time in 7 years when we get to it.
I mean, I kind of like the difference in how the Klingons are portrayed in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously, again, they're taking some, if the DS9 characterization of Klingons is different, they're obviously taking some cues from that at this point. So that might be part of the difference of the portrayal, I would assume.
Yeah, sure.
Also, for more of this, I mean, I really liked seeing what the Klingons do just as a celebration. And for the most part, the stuff when they're on the outposts and all of that, again, I think it's cool to just tour around Klingon and see what they do, And this is a celebration. This has nothing to do with political wrangling or maneuvering. Any of the elements of that in this episode are, a red herring, actually. And so, I think it is cool to see, oh, this is a religious celebration, and they have this ridiculous opera, and this is what they do in their festival. Or, this is how how people are going to rook, kids at a carnival in Klingon. Stuff like that, I liked it for those reasons.
Yeah, that's the part of the episode that I really do enjoy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that a lot of the reason why I don't appreciate Klingon episodes is... just the general tone that they have in the next generation. It's very sort of Cold War machinations just everyone's very dour and humorless. And in this episode, at least, I feel like you get to see a different side of
the
Klingon culture.
They're letting their hair down, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like they're at a carnival.
Yeah.
And it's colorful and it's fun and there's singing and there's opera and it's all good. I like those parts of the episode.
Frankly, it's interesting to get another take on Kales, especially since we've sort of met him,
Yeah. And I guess, it does make sense that the Klingons would have some sort of ritualized storytelling in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I know Klingon opera is a thing. And I frankly fucking love the concept of it because,
Yeah, and you get to see some of it here.
It makes total sense. Again, you think, I like what they do with Klingons because, again, it's not just they're warriors. Everything is very ritualized. And, the Klingons are... Number one, the Klingons are probably one of the more passionate races that we've seen.
Yeah.
Any feeling they feel, they are feeling it very strongly. Frankly, I think that this episode really made me think about the fact that Klingons and Vulcans probably do have a lot of in common, except... the Vulcans channel their aggression and their emotions through logic.
Right.
The Klingons, in a way, deal with their excess of emotion by allowing themselves to experience it in certain times. In other words, a Klingon can get really mad and fight, you know, within certain, you know, strictures. Everything is very ritualized, so there is a time and a place for everything.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, opera is about as dramatic as a form you can get, and I, you know, it makes total sense why the Klingons would love it. It's, you can have, you know, think very Wagnerian, you know.
It's big, over the top.
Big battles, costumes, sets, everyone singing, you know, fights. Yeah, like, I mean, I love that. And I think, again, it makes sense that the Klingons, if the Klingons were just fighting each other willy-nilly, if they were letting their emotions take care of them any moment they could, they would destroy themselves. And the implication before Kaelas is there is that that's where they were headed. And Klingon society now, it's barely holding on, certainly, you know, especially what we've seen on the homeworld. But, you know, it seems that they have all these releases built into their society almost.
But, you know, it's interesting because I think that you say that the Empire is barely holding on. And I think there's obviously we've seen a civil war. We've seen Gowron be very dishonorable. All of these things. Right. And I agree with you. But I think that, you know, the sort of the interpretation or the read I get on that is sort of that the Klingons after the events of Star Trek VI and after Praxis and all of that really had to adapt to live on a galactic stage that was dominated by the Federation. And the Federation is not going to be, you know, when Kirk was running around the galaxy and the Enterprise and encountering Klingons every few episodes, they were able to sort of like glare at each other and not have anything develop into all out battle. But the implication always was that it was there. And now that that's not really an option, and now that the Klingons have to engage with the Federation on a level which is not warmongering, which is not violent, they're sort of losing who they are as Klingons in a sense. And I think that's where the show has sort of been getting that from a little bit, and where Gowron is coming from, you know, where all the Duras stuff is coming from, you know, all of those things, right?
I mean, frankly, if you have, you know, Kirk's time, the Klingons are doing, are a little more openly warlike. That's a safety valve right there, you know, it's taken away.
Yeah.
There's, you know, so while the, you know, Klingon society is imploding a little bit, you know, we've seen in Heart of Glory, you know, young Klingons going crazy just because they have this, you know, they want to be like a young, you know, badass going through the, you know, going through galaxy, and that option doesn't exist for them anymore.
Right.
And they're just going nuts. So,
But I think it's interesting because, you know, aside from the Klingon stuff and aside from seeing a different side of that culture than we've seen before, you know, interestingly enough, this wasn't written by Ron Moore, you know, who wrote a lot of the Klingon episodes. So I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing a different side of the Klingons in this episode. The actual episode,
It's cheesy as hell, but I loved it.
I don't think it's very good.
No,
and I don't,
it makes no sense.
I just, you know, No, I'm just saying, you know, I get why you think it's cheesy and I get why you think it's enjoyable. But for me, it paints itself as a very different episode than what we get. And the last 5 minutes of the episode really kill any goodwill I have for it.
Yeah. You know, frankly, I thought that, you know, the twist was going to be said, oh, I'm Alexander from the future. And it turned out he's really the Duras sister's son from the future. And
but no, he really
doing some
is.
Kind of covert assassination mission, some kind of maybe Alexander becomes John Connor in the future. I think it's hilarious, though, that Alexander, even the future, is a fuck up. Because he doesn't, you know, he makes the decision which gets his father killed. He can't get his younger self to become a warrior. He can't even fucking kill his 9-year-old self. Like, nothing he does is right. And I loved that because I hate Alexander.
But I mean, it is very true to the character as constructed.
Right? Like, this is Alexander's tapestry. I mean, let's face it. The man that he met in the bar was Q. We know this, right? That's my fanon.
I guess. I mean, I don't know, maybe. but I kind of feel like this is a very strange thing for the show to pull off.
It's a very stupid thing.
It's not something that the show really does. I mean, we're getting into weird sort of like fake quantum leap territory here. And, you know, the show has, you know, Star Trek as a franchise has always treated time travel as something to avoid. And when you can't avoid it, you have to work as hard as possible to not, you know, pollute the timeline or reset things or cause problems, right? And if something does go wrong and if something changes, it has to be reset. Now, whether or not that's actually what time is like, nobody really knows. Yeah. We could Skype with a physicist right now and find out what they think. But it doesn't matter. For the purposes thing is, of this,
when you're writing a science fiction story, you have to have the answer for that question. You know, in other words, Back to the Future, they may not know exactly every single instance of time, but they can say for a fact, yes, when you make a decision, it splits off into a different timeline and you can change the past. Right. You know? Or you have something like 12 Monkeys, which they may not necessarily know all the ramifications, but they can say, no, all time is static. You know, Star Trek, it doesn't really seem to know. It wants it all these different ways, and it doesn't good enough at avoiding the question in this episode, at least.
Well, you know, that's funny you say that, because the actual time travel part doesn't bother me. Like, we've seen time travel happen almost on accident in Star Trek, like, more than once. So to me, time travel is something that, you know, it's like going to Los Angeles, right? I can drive in a car, I can fly, I can take a boat, I can get on, you know, like, there's all these options there. So time travel to me is just like, well, flying around a sun is one way to get there. Going through the Guardian of Forever is another way to get there. You know, whatever, right? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, certain beings have the power to do, yeah.
Yeah. So time
travel, it's whatever the plot needs, exactly. Frankly.
But so that part doesn't bother me. It's like, well, okay, time travel, fine. Alexander time traveled back. That's okay to me. What I don't like about it is that it treats the character of Alexander, and it treats Alexander poorly, and it treats him poorly for this reason. I think that if Alexander grows up to be a fuck up, as you say, it's Worf's fault. Worf is not a good father.
No.
Worf is a shitty father. Alexander has sort of disappeared in the past, like, season and a half.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's mentioned him from time to time.
He hasn't
even
mentioned him, I don't think.
In little things.
Parallels, for example.
I was going to say, and I think the funny thing is that, now, number one, I'm very glad that, we really won't be much more in the way of Worf and Troy, because that wasn't even a thing in this episode,
right?
You know?
Yeah, we're running out of episodes for them.
Yeah, really, exactly. Like, that was just kind of like a, you know, but in that entire time, like, Alexander has feelings about that.
Sure.
Troy and, you know, put it this way, Troy would very specific, Troy, even if Worf doesn't think about what Alexander's going through, Troy is definitely going to have Alexander's feelings on her mind for this, because, you know, no matter what, you know, even though Alexander loves her, he's still going to be weird, you know, and that's not even on anyone's radar, you know?
Well, Alexander's not on anyone's radar, and that's fine.
Because he's just it's like he doesn't exist when they couldn't get the actor.
And that's kind of the problem, I think, is that Alexander was just poorly conceived. The character of Alexander was not poorly conceived. I don't think
I was going to say, I remember the sex scene. It was great.
I think that putting him on the Enterprise was a mistake for the show. Yeah. They had no follow through on that. And I think that, you know, but aside from that, and these are all things that we've talked about before, is that in Firstborn, you know, Alexander comes back from the future, where he's become an ambassador, right? And apparently he's a good one, I guess. I mean, he doesn't seem to be like, I don't know, his life doesn't seem that shitty. I'm not really getting where all this, you know, existential grief is coming from or angst. But he seems to be unhappy. He said, I wasn't a warrior. You know, you died as a result of something that happened. I mean, it's all very vague, and it all sort of really doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah.
And again, though, if Alexander becomes someone who isn't successful or isn't good at his job or whatever, and even he feels like Worf's death is his fault, this is Worf's fault. Worf is not a good father. And the show having Alexander come back in time to kill his 6-year-old self is so just, it's not offensive, it's just, it's such a,
it's stupid.
Well, it's
I guess it's
it doesn't treat the character of Alexander with the respect that I think the show at its best has treated all the characters, and it doesn't treat Worf with respect either, because it's not calling Worf on his shit.
I was gonna say, the show is not willing to, everything that we've seen about how, you know, Worf and Alexander interact, you know, again, yes, I think they're very, you know, we both agree, Worf is not a great dad. I think the show thinks he's not the best dad, but I think the show just thinks he's bumbling, but's going to love his way through and figure it out. You know, when the show is not willing to admit that he is as bad of a father as he is.
Right.
And it's not a – I mean, it's a judgment on Worf in one way, but it's, you know – I mean, the episode, you know, makes it almost implies that, well, he's going to spend more time with this kid and everything will be fine. Everything will be fine now. And I don't know if that's –
I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think that Worf is interested in Alexander.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Worf is interested in being a father. And I don't think that Worf is interested in doing the work to be a good one.
I mean, I'm going to – let me ask you a few questions here. Like,
sure.
So, I mean, because the one thing I'm thinking about, like the scene when Big Alexander is, you know, basically talking Little Alexander in and he's saying, you know, oh, you know, your house with your cousins and they'd love to meet you and, you know, it's beautiful there, you know, and Alexander's starting to, you know, and I mean, that was a great – I loved that scene.
Sure.
But – and then like in the next scene, he's like, you must go to – I'm like, number one – why has Alexander never met his cousins before? You would think that Worf would have tried to pawn him off on them.
Yeah.
Number two, I think it's hilarious that it's either like you're on the Enterprise or you're living on Klingon full time. Like, no, you know, no one's told Alexander, look, you know, let's spend a month there. You know, it'll be fine. Go on vacation, meet your cousins,
right,
and then come back. And, you know, something, I mean, if Klingon is so great, then, you know, Alexander's going to want to stay. You know, like, you would think that that would be the more obvious. Like I said, that's how much Alexander is a fuck up. He can't even talk to himself.
Yeah, I think so. But, and that's a problem with the episode, though, I think, is that, you know, shuttling a child around like this is not going to be good for the child's psyche or the child's development.
Yeah.
And so Alexander, you know, was living with his mother. His mother was, you know, murdered.
Died in front
of
him.
He saw her get murdered.
Again, to the degree where as an adult he remembers the scene. Yeah, like that's – his mother's death is –
that would be pretty seared into your memory.
Is the thing that proves his identity, yeah.
Right. Then – he gets sort of like attached to Worf because Worf is his father.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not, you know, Worf pawns him off to his elderly parents. Then a couple of years later, they come back to him and they say, listen, we can't take care of this kid.
Yeah.
We're old. Like, he's crazy. Like, we can't, you know, we can't take care of a 4-year-old or whatever the hell he is. So then Worf is like, all right, fine. I guess I'll take care of my son and proceeds to completely ignore him. And when he doesn't completely ignore him, he browbeats him, yells at him, makes him feel inadequate, makes him feel guilty, all of these things. Then we have this episode where suddenly Alexander, adult Alexander, comes back in time and tries to talk younger Alexander into a life that is something that might be great. But I don't think that there was ever really any thought given to the fact that Alexander has already been shuttled around 3 times or 4 times. So let's shuttle him around again to another place.
Yeah. And he's a little – you know, I mean, I know they have this thing that, well, you have to take this right within, you know, before you turn certain age, you know, and, you know, time is slowly running out. Yeah, but –
Nobody.
Yeah, he's not ready to make his next move. I mean, yes, in 5 years he's going to want to be, you know, maybe Alexander's going to want to go to the academy in 5-10 years, you know, and but he's not ready to leave yet. He needs that. He wants that stability.
And frankly, I mean, I agree with you, but also frankly, I think that there's a couple of problems with it. Number one is that no one on the show is interested in Alexander's welfare, as a character, right? Which is really unfortunate for the Next Generation to do, because again, they usually treat characters with respect and dignity, and they're not treating Alexander with respect or dignity. They're treating him as a toy, as a doll, basically. Number two is that the character of adult Alexander, who comes back and pretends to be a member of the House of Martok or whatever, not Martok, the House of
Mog.
Of what?
Of Mog.
Of Mog, yeah.
He's there, because he says there he's their consigliere, basically.
Right. Like, which, number one, he's not. Because he's Alexander time traveling from the future.
Yeah.
So why did Worf even know who he was?
Well, I mean, the implication is that he has like the family's signature ring or something like that, and
the whole thing.
Yeah,
I know.
It didn't make sense. Yeah, but anyway.
And then the show seems to be saying that if a child is raised inappropriately and becomes a failure for reasons that have nothing to do with the child, that the adult child needs to go back in time. What is show trying to say?
You know,
something
here? Like, I'm again, you know, I this is
like, I almost wish that there was Child Protective Services on the Federation and someone would come to Alexander's quarters and ask, are you okay? What's going on with you? Do you want to be taken out of here?
Yeah.
Because I think he would say yes.
You know,
I don't think he has a good life.
No, I really find it interesting that between Wesley, the last week, and Alexander this week, like, someone's getting out childhood issues right now. Someone is writing out in Star Trek how they were raised.
Yeah.
And, you know?
And I think the other real issue here, too, is that aside from all of the subtext and aside from all of the sort of, like, problems with the episode, is isn't Alexander a Federation citizen? Like, doesn't he have some rights and responsibilities here? Like, he doesn't have to go to Kronos. He doesn't have to do anything.
No, and he's saying...
And,
you know what this all reminds me of watching this episode? This reminded me very much of... So, you know, Catholic, I went through confirmation classes and all of that, but I knew a lot of people who, they didn't necessarily want to make their confirmation, but their parents were kind of, you know, saying, go through the classes, it's 2 years, because if you ever want to get married in the Catholic Church, like, it's going to be so much easier, you know, if you haven't made your confirmation, you know, in 10 years, it's going to be a lot more, you know. That almost seems like what's going on here. I mean, Worf says at one point, like, well, if you want to be a warrior and you haven't done this, you know, you don't have to do the second rite if you don't want to, but, you know, that you can do whenever. You know,
right.
The first rite you have to do now, and at least just we'll do this, go through this, you know, and you can make your decision now, but if you don't do this, you'll regret it, you know? And to one degree, I understand that. To another degree, you know, I do agree that a 9-year-old can't necessarily decide what they're going to want to be 20 years from now. You know, who he is as a kid and who he is as an adult are, as we see, very different things, you know, but, you know, right now he doesn't want to – anyway, all of that, it's in a way disrespectful to Klingon because it's not something he wants to do. It's just something like, well, just do this in case, you know, you don't want to do it later. Not, and this rite wouldn't mean anything to Alexander. It would just
right.
be something he's doing to please his father, which – while that is a Klingon value from what we've seen.
Well, also, and frankly, I mean, why would Alexander want to do this?
Yeah.
Like, his father treats him like shit.
Yeah, I know.
I don't, you
and,
know.
And we haven't seen enough of him, and Alexander hasn't even been a person enough to, like, people who have not great relationships with their parents still do have very complex relationships.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon for somebody whose dad is abused to still want to get their dad's favor.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And there is a part of Alexander, you know, I guess I would have liked to have seen a version of Alexander that we can believably say is going through this struggle of being a warrior is the last thing I want to do, but pleasing dad, you know, getting dad proud of me is the thing I want most in the
right.
world. Like, you know, this is a very strong struggle within. Again, part of the reason he does and does not want to be a warrior, doesn't want to be a warrior because he doesn't want to be like his dad.
Yeah.
He wants to be a warrior because he wants to be like his dad. Again, that's a very strong conflict within Alexander, but we've never bought that. He's never been enough of a person that we can buy this going on in his head.
Right,
and,
right. And that, I think that's a really good point. I think that that's kind of the other problem with the episode is that it suddenly makes us – or it suddenly expects us – to treat Alexander as a person, and he's never been a person, right? So I don't know, the whole thing is just a huge mess. I mean, we haven't even talked about the weird stuff with the assassination attempts.
Oh,
and
God,
the Duras,
you know,
sisters.
I mean, I liked, like, the Duras sisters in
they're
this.
Fun.
I assume they have an episode on DS9 or
yeah, they did,
because they mentioned at one point, so I assume we would have seen that. You know, I like that. You know, when they finally track down the Duras sisters, like, yes, they're up to, like, a really evil scheme, you know, but it's, like, nothing to do with anything else.
It has nothing to do with the plot of the episode.
Yeah, I know. I think that's funny. Like, and I think it's funny that just, like, we're just as confused as you. Like, we want to find out what the fuck is going on here.
Right.
Like,
I kind of like that where they're, you know, the implication is sort of, they're kind of like, well, we're not above killing kids, but
yeah,
we're not trying, like, to kill this one.
Well, no, it's, yeah, it's like, this is, yeah, I totally understand why you would suspect us. Listen, you caught us in the middle of a very illegal smuggling mission, you know? Look, we're horrible people, but no, that's a great plan, though. Why did we think of that? Look, see you in 6 months, you know?
Right, right, yeah. The whole thing is just very messy.
You know?
I mean, you do get to see Riker being excited and talking to Quark and stuff, which is always fun.
Oh yeah, I forgot that Quark was in this episode. We're gonna meet Quark soon.
Yeah, Quark is a main character in Deep Space Nine, so you're gonna have fun looking at that in a couple weeks. And I guess the final thing to say before we move on to Bloodlines is where did Picard go?
Where didn't Picard
like,
go?
Like, he was in the episode and then he just
oh, yeah, he was like, bye, archaeological day.
Like, what was that? did Patrick Stewart have something to do that week?
I was just saying, they, you know.
It was very strange. Anyway. Yeah, overall, I think this is a middling episode at best. I think the show is really just, I'm just waiting it out at this point.
I think I don't remember if it was this episode and another, and you said, yeah, it's just waiting at the clock right now. You know, it's 3 o'clock, school's over at 3:15, and they're just, you know. Yeah,
they're ready to wrap
drawing up. Circles in their math notebook.
This is definitely a five.
This is a five.
All right.
Well, six because of the opera.
Okay.
The opera scene gets a 10. The rest of it gets a five. And even Alexander even fucks up the opera.
All right, let's talk about Bloodlines, which
is a stupid episode.
This is a complete waste of time.
Yeah, because it spends its time setting up something that the show has been waiting for since the first episode. We've been waiting to see, oh, Ripcard, you really have a son. Like, that's a logical thing for this to go. I'm surprised that I never thought that it would do this plotline earlier, because it... All of the business with Wesley being a surrogate son, all of the business with Picard is always, you know, Picard has had these chances to have a family, or we've seen glimpses of having a family, and he's not. He's always chosen. You know, the fact that, you know, Worf actually has, you know, Picard actually has a son out there. Again, that just seems like a nice cap on that kind of through line that's been from the beginning. But they do it in the dumbest way, in a way that just, by the way, no, not really at the end.
Okay, but here's my problem. I mean, I agree with you, but I think that did you really think that there was any way this was going to be Picard's son? I mean, there is no way in hell that a show this late in its run is going to introduce the son of the main character.
Well, I mean, it's
asinine to believe that. I mean, and I'm not calling you asinine. But
No.
But you know what I mean, though? It's like, I don't – who bought that this was really Picard's son? Of course this is not going to turn out to be Picard's son. And so the
entire
episode –
Well, I mean, I'm going to be honest, because they have been doing enough with tying it to DS9 lately. It's not impossible that – you know, this guy is going to be on DS9, and, you know, his backstory is, oh, I'm really Captain Picard's son, you know. It's just kind of a thing. Like,
really?
I don't know. It's not impossible.
Okay.
But, I mean, the I don't know. I didn't question it till the end, and I thought that the way they explained how it wasn't was really... Again, both of the twists in both of these were just kind of stupid and for their own sake.
Just to me, it's like, you know, the show has never really done anything like that before.
No.
I mean, they don't really set things up for other shows. Not deliberately, at least, right? I mean, aside
no,
from, like...
the experimental season set.
We're going to see an episode in a couple of weeks, which I believe is the last episode before the finale, that will... Actually, I guess it's next week, because we really only have two episodes left after this one of Deep Space, not, or of Next Generation anyway, that deliberately does set something up that becomes a thing in Deep Space Nine later. So that one's going to be a little difficult to talk about, just because I'm going to have to give some background for your information.
Yeah.
But aside from that, the show hasn't really done that before. So I guess I can – I mean, I –
Again, but it doesn't seem like it's impossible.
I have to accept your interpretation of events. I just have a hard time believing personally that many people bought that this guy was actually Picard's son. Because, again, it's a rare show that is going to, like, suddenly introduce the son of the main character in episode 23 of the last season.
Again, given that – but the show has done weird shit again with, you know, locks onto Troy's backstory. Again, it's late enough in the game that – they could introduce Picard's son and never have to deal with it again. And, you know, in two episodes, we're going to be done anyway.
But
so.
I think even if they were going, I mean, Lo'Waxana Troi is a different thing, though, because Lo'Waxana Troi is not a main character.
But they also, I mean,
and you can get away with more things when you develop
new
and profound information about a non-main character. I just feel like with Jason Vigo, or whatever the fuck his name is. Is that his name? Yeah.
Vigo, like from Ghostbusters.
Right. Ghostbusters 2, which is not that bad of a movie.
Well, that's high praise from Eric. Everyone, you know, when you're not watching Star Trek, watch Ghostbusters 2, just like on repeat.
Please.
Says Eric
Brazier. Please tune in for our Ghostbusters podcast, Ghostbusters 2 About, which is just we take each minute of Ghostbusters 2.
And we talk about it.
Talk about it for 45 minutes. We're going to do 114 episodes of that. No, I think that.
Why was it that long?
I don't know. I think so. My problem with it again is like I guess I can see your okay, fine, I believe you, but
again,
I have to because you're here in front of me talking.
I mean, I'm gonna be honest, it's not like I thought it out that
but
closely.
Like, you know, but to me it's like Jason Vigo, okay, if he's gonna be a main character in Deep Space Nine or whatever, right? Like, Picard's not going to show up in Deep Space Nine every week. So why have this character that has this relationship to Picard and then not use Picard? Like, it's just like, okay,
I don't know that
if it was Picard's brother or something, it'd be one thing, but his son is a pretty big deal. Anyway, let's talk about the episode as it exists, because it is a pile of shit.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I guess all of it, I mean, a lot of the flaws do, because it's not like I don't disagree with you. It is a, I mean, I was going with the, okay, so this is really Picard's son. That's stupid, you know? Like, I the fact that I believed it didn't mean that I accepted it or liked it.
Okay.
I mean, come on. It's not like the show has not made missteps this season.
That is true. Yeah, I'll go with you there.
You know, I guess, and part of my incline to believe it was because just, I'm just going to, you know, I just watched an episode where the old guy turned out to be Alexander from the future. You know, it's Picard has a son he didn't know about is not dumber or more far-fetched than what we just saw.
And I guess, you know, the thing, though, is that, like, they do go out of their way to make him enough like Picard that you could buy it without really selling the relationship. Right. And I think that, I don't know, the point of the episode is not Jason Vigo. The point of the episode is not, let's see Damon Bach again, because really, who cares?
Oh, yeah. I was not like, I had to remind myself what the hell the Bach backstory was. The Bach story.
The Bach story. Yeah. It doesn't, I mean, they've done a couple of callbacks to the first season this year, and I'm not really sure why, because I would like to pretend that version of the show doesn't even exist, honestly. You know? But Jason Vigo as a character is annoying.
Yeah.
He's a brat.
Yeah.
He's kind of like the outrageous Akana in a way.
But not as sexy.
There's that horrible scene where he hits on Troy, and then to her credit, she's like, listen, dude, I'm a medical professional. Mm-hmm. Are you going to listen to me? Okay, I'm leaving. Make an appointment if you want to see me.
And that's the last like scene they have together in this episode, right?
I think so, yeah. And really, again, it's about, you know, I guess, There's a couple.
Yeah, what was the point of this episode?
I think there's a couple points. Number one is that they really wanted to bring Damon Bach back because I guess somebody on the writing staff really wanted to tie up that loose end. All right. I mean, that's not my choice.
But the hell of it is, it's also the same exact plot that he was in before, which is that, I've got a great Grinchy idea. I'm Damon Bach, you know, and they defeat him in the exact same way by telling his crew, look, he's just doing a personal revenge thing. And they're all, there's no profit in this. Fuck you. It's the exact same episode.
I mean, are you surprised that Ferengi wouldn't be that imaginative?
But I mean, the Star Trek writers aren't Ferengi, so why are they thinking that, you know?
Well, they're just being consistent with the characterization of the Ferengi. So that's, I mean, what else can you say about that? It's the Damon Bach, he does the same exact thing, he gets defeated, the end. Like, there's really nothing interesting there. There's nothing to talk about. It's boring, frankly.
Yeah, it doesn't really, you know, because I, you know, it's funny because I remember saying that I actually liked I liked that a lot when they had the first, you know, that one Bach episode, because, you know, we've seen plenty of time, you know, I think one of my points is we've seen plenty of times they will remove a captain who's unfit for duty.
Sure.
And I think it's funny that the, you know, that was the moment that the Ferengi stopped being kind of as shitty as they had been. I remember, you know, they characterized them as, well, they're so profit hungry that you're insane if you're not, you know, you're unfit for duty if you're not profit focus, you know, you know, it's a version of the Ferengi that's not the big bad of the universe. You know, they're just a bunch of crooks, and, you know, it's not good to be around the Ferengi, but you can work, you know, once you know that they care about profit above everything else, you can work with it.
Oh, sure. Because, I mean, I think that that's one of the nice things about the Ferengi in the episode, at least the Ferengi that they talk to about, Damon Bach getting out of prison, right? Where he's like, oh, well, he was able to buy himself out. It's like, of course he was. That makes sense. You know, same thing with Firstborn. You know, we didn't really talk about Quark that much, but it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
You get to him through Latinum. You get to him through money. All right. Yeah. That's fair. But again, it's just, not that interesting. And so what the episode hinges on is developing a relationship between Picard and Jason Vigo, which has the rug cut completely out from under it at minute 44.
I mean, let's be honest, they're never going to see each other again.
Well, no, of course. Why would they? I mean, they're not related. And I'm not saying...
I was going to say, within the next 5 years, poor Jason Vigo is going to be stabbed in a bar fight, you know? And that's what's going to happen to him.
He's not going to be a good... He's not going to have a good end, right? And again, I don't really know why the show wanted to go here. I don't know why... Is this really the best? Like, if they wanted to bring Damon Bach back and tie up that loose end or what?
Wasn't even a loose end.
I don't know what they were thinking, but they wanted to do something with it, so they decided that this is what they were going to do. You know, frankly, maybe having him be Picard's son would have been more interesting. I don't know. And I think that, you know, everything that we've seen about Picard in the last 7 years is here is a man who has sacrificed family, has sacrificed a love and children for a career. And he is not someone who is going to really be interested in doing that, I don't think, ever. Right? Like, his first love is Starfleet.
Yeah.
And his children are his crew, even though I don't think Picard would put it that way. But we've seen him have a fatherly relationship with Wesley.
Yeah.
I don't know why we need to see this again with a random guest star.
I know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Wesley, if it's to replace Wesley who just left Starfleet, you know, what if the, if it had been Picard's son, the only way for, you know, Vigo to have ended would be to have him join Starfleet, you know, and... That's stupid too. Like,
which isn't even an option because Vigo doesn't seem that intelligent to join Starfleet.
It could be, you know, one of the grunts on the phone. But yeah, like that's a thing. Like if either it ends with, you know, he's actually your son, and while there's only two episodes left and we won't see where their relationship develops, you know, we can assume that, you know, they're going to be in touch or that, you know, something's, you know, and that's fine, you know.
And to be fair, I think they could have made it work. I mean, they introduced Captain Kirk's son in Star Trek II without ever having mentioned him before.
Yeah.
And it worked fine, right? They could have done it, I think. And that's kind of where I think the show kind of falls down on itself, is that they don't want to make the hard choices. They want to tell a story about Picard connecting with his son, but not actually have it be his son, not have anything change. And you know what? Honestly, I started off this conversation saying, why would anyone think that the show would introduce Picard's son this late in the seventh season? Well,
why would they trick us like this?
Well, but why not, right? Like, if this is a show that doesn't want to deal with that but wants to tell that story, why not have it be Picard's son? You're not going to have to deal with
that. Again, that's part of the reason I figured they would make such a risk is to...
After that, they've got three episodes left. They don't care.
I was going to say the finale is probably even all written at this point, you know? Like,
they were working on it at the time. That's... So... It's kind of just one of those things where you look at it and you say, nobody wanted to make any choices here.
This is a show it's weird because for all of its experimentalism in this season, it's not doing anything. I mean, there are some daring moves it can make that it kind of pussies out on, and it doesn't, you know. I don't know. Like I said, this episode felt extremely pointless because what were we supposed to get from it? Again, the box story, whatever. Jason Vigo, he doesn't exist anymore. He affects the galaxy as much as O'Connor does, you know. And frankly, I'm actually surprised do we have an O'Connor episode coming up? Because is that
the finale is actually called All Good O'Connors.
Oh my god. And it turns out that Picard was like, I was actually O'Connor the whole time. This is how much we don't want to talk about, you know, Jason Vigo.
I understand. He's a shitty character. Yeah, and I think that, you know, again, the episode could have been about interesting things, right? It could have been about, well, family doesn't have to be related to you. It could be about, wow, the Ferengi are shitty. What the fuck are they doing? Mm-hmm. Like, Damon Bach commits basically assault on a Federation citizen. I assume Jason is a Federation citizen.
He trespasses on a starship. He does, like, so many horrible things in this episode.
And the original conception for this episode is, I read on Memory Alpha was actually a lot cooler than what we got.
Oh, yeah?
Well, because the original conception of the episode was that Jason Vigo was going to be sort of like raised by Damon Bach or something, and like false memories were implanted about Picard abandoning him, and then like at the same time Damon Bach was going to use the mind control device from the battle to implant false memories in Picard's head of Jason Vigo being abandoned on the Stargazer, and like all these really dark things. Huh. And I don't know that it would have worked.
Well,
and I think that would have been too dark for the Next Generation, but it would have had a point. It would have been more interesting than what we get. And yeah, you know, Picard's been psychologically tortured at least 3 times in the show. I don't know that we need to see it again, and I don't know that we need to see it at this point in the show's run. But this episode is just kind of like a big wet fart. Like, it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't serve a purpose, and it smells bad.
Well, you know, I mean, I remember we were talking, you know, about how, you know, these were a lot of these were stuff that had been floating around for a while. So, you know, maybe they really did think as early as season 4 or 5, you know, hey, what if Picard finds his long lost son? And, you know, they drafted this, but they just couldn't do it. I mean, that frankly, yeah, for sure, you know, adding him in the 7th season, no, but maybe they would have added him in the 4th season, you know, and they just never got to him. And then someone said, well, this character's still out there. We've got to deal with this.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know what else we can really talk about.
It was a stupid app. Like I said, this wasn't...
I think you can tell that we're both just tired.
Yeah.
And we just want to get through the 7th season at this point.
You know, Firstborn wasn't a good episode, but I found it very entertaining. This, I was just... I can't remember any scenes from this episode. Like, I can't remember, you know, any, you know,
all felt very flat.
Oh, we was genetically manipulating you. Ha, you know, it's like
nothing seemed to have any weight. You know, it just all sort of seemed to float from scene to scene with no hook, with no gravitas, with no gravity, nothing. It was just there and it just ended. And that was that.
Yeah.
One subspace transporter.
Oh, I'll give it 2 because now I can't.
You think
even
Jason Vigo's cute?
I was about to say I'm going to give it 2 because I think Jason Vigo's cute, but I don't think Jason Vigo's cute.
No, he's not.
He's not even cute. He looks like a potato.
He's a butthead. Well, as a representative of the potato people, I do not want to. I will not let that slide.
You're a potato person?
Well, the Irish, you know.
Mm.
The other thing I do want to add on to this conversation, and then we can tell you many things about the show, is that. What, like, the planet that Jason Vigo lives on? Like,
he
tells this touching story about his mother. We haven't even talked about the whole orphanage thing, whatever his
do
mother
we
was
have
doing.
To?
No, we don't have to. I don't want to. I think it's pointless.
I put my fingers in my ears for that.
It was a total like constructed narrative to get Picard to feel bad for him. Was it true? Was it not true? I'm not even interested in talking about it because really, what does it matter? His mother was a wonderful person. Like. Ostensibly, she and Jason are Federation citizens. What I don't understand about this, and sort of I think we had this conversation when we sort of talked about Tasha Yar as a character, even going back to the 4th season with her sister.
Because this is a rape gang planet. This
right.
is basically where
right.
Tasha... This may even be the same planet where she grew up, or if it's not, it's pretty much the same one.
I mean, I don't think it's the same one.
But you know, like...
But it's similar. Like, why does the Federation... Number one, why do Federation citizens live on planets like this? And number two, why does the Federation allow this to happen?
Well, is this a Federation planet? I wasn't sure about
well
that.
If it's a Federation planet or it's not, they're human,
but
and
I mean they it's not like
if you're a Federation citizen and you can live in any Federation planet that you want to, why the fuck would you live on this one?
Well, I mean, you know, well, I mean, for the mother, I mean, she wants to live on this one because this is where she feels she can, you know, she feels moved to help the children there. All right, fine. Let's say it's not a Federation.
Okay.
You know, it's a random planet where there was a war and she's helping the orphans. And yes, you know,
wonderful.
He's her kid and he has to go with, you know, but yeah, at this point, like he, you know, and even
like, that's the thing is like, I have a life there. I need to get back to it, even though it's a mess. Why?
Yeah.
Why? You are on the flagship of the
you
Federation.
Could, yeah, I would say at that
Picard
point, you could go,
feels bad for you. Go anywhere.
You have the golden ticket.
Go to Earth. Go to Vulcan. Go to Alpha Centauri.
Hell, my life isn't as messed up as his is, and I'm like, I would totally take that.
Right, and that's kind of the I think it's kind of the problem where it's kind of like you look at this and you say, okay, like if I was in this situation and I was on the flagship of the Federation, I had a comfortable bed and a replicator that could make any food I wanted, and a holodeck and buxom women if that was my thing to flirt with, like why would I go back to my shitty hovel planet? I don't.
I mean, yeah, and let's face this. At this point, even though Picard knows he's not his son. To a degree, it doesn't matter, you know, if anything Jason asked Picard would do, you know, because, right. you know, I think, you know, again, at the end of this, if he had said, look, you know, I'd like to get my life together, you know, maybe I can get a job as the bartender in 10 forward, you know, type of thing, like, would be.
Or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. There is, put it this way, you tell Captain Picard, look.
Go to Earth and live on the fucking beach.
Again,
like, who cares?
You tell Picard, look, I need to figure out something, you know, he's going to say, all right, what do you want to do? You know, anything, you know, that's, he's, you know, Jason Vigo's gotten his golden ticket and he's, again, traded it for that bar fight, and he yeah. could have a bar fight in a much nicer planet if you want it.
Right.
It anyway, didn't sell it.
No, it did not. Well, if you would like to disagree or agree with us in either one of these episodes, please do so at the post at trekaboutshow.com.
Turns out that more people agree with me than you.
That is true. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/trekaboutshow. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekaboutshow. And leave us a positive iTunes review. We haven't gotten one in many weeks, and I'm telling you, people, you're slacking off.
I'm lonely.
Richard's lonely, and I'm unhappy.
Really happy that I'm lonely, though.
Aww.
Ironically.
Next week, we are reaching the second to last episode of The Next Generation of Trek About by talking about Emergence and Preemptive Strike. And stay tuned, because in 2 weeks, we will be doing All Good Things, aww. And we will tell you all kinds of things about the future of Trek About, what's going to be happening with it, how we're going to be constructing the show in the future.
I'm going to be very honest, listeners. I know what's coming, and I'm going to probably cry on the episode.
Spoiler alert, Trek About is continuing. Nothing is really changing.
So much stuff is changing.
I just wanted to be dramatic.
Like a Klingon opera.
We'll talk to you next week.